My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution, talking about, of course, how the world is changing through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. And of course, that technology is Bitcoin. It's always technology that changes the world. And boy, do we need that now more than ever. Now, today I am joined by Joe Consorti. Joe, thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Joe is an amazing analyst, researcher. He works with the Bitcoin Layer. If you're not subscribed, we're going to link it down below. Check out the Bitcoin Layer. He also helps me out with some research as well. And man, do we have a lot to talk about. We just got off of an hour-long conversation with the Bitcoin Magazine space. We're going to talk about it some more because I want to take it into a different place than it did before. Now, we spent a lot of time talking about what happened. And I don't want to continue going down that road. If you don't understand what's happened, just go check my main YouTube channel. I did a whole video on that. There's plenty of information about that. But I want to talk about a couple other things, and it's really about like where do we go from here. So a couple things that I want to frame up, and we'll talk about. First off, Joe, we touched on just at the end of that last space, but the Fed is not fixing the problem, or maybe they are, but they're like the arsonist. They light the building on fire, then they seem to show up to try to put it out, but then it just seems to make it even bigger. And so you were kind of rattling off like how far apart these booms and busts were and how they've gotten closer together. Talk to us about that. So you started before the Fed's creation. So the Fed was started in 1913. And so we can't show the chart right now, but the booms and busts have gotten bigger since the Fed's creation in 1913, and they've gotten closer together. Run us through that time frame.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have it in front of me. And essentially, I got this sort of inspiration to talk about this on the space from the film Margin Call. I'm sure a lot of the people listening now have seen it. And essentially, following the 2008 financial crisis, this fictional bank CEO, he walks through all of the boom and bust cycles. And since the Fed's inception, they've actually gotten much closer together. For reference, 1637, 1797, those are the first two major economic crises that were faced by the United States. And if you'll notice, those were very far apart, right? More than a century apart. But then they start getting somewhat closer together as the 19th century rolls around, 1819, 1937, 57, 84. And those are four during the entire 19th century that are faced. And then we're approaching the creation of the Fed, 1901, 1907, World War I is at our doorstep. Obviously, you know, the income tax was created expressly as a very temporary measure. The Federal Reserve was created as well as a temporary measure. And then they start to get closer together. Right? We have 1939, 1937. Those are 8 years apart. And then you have a bit of a break because of the war. And then 1973, 1987. So they're pretty close. But then they get extremely close as the 21st century approaches. 1992 and 1997, right? Those are 5 years apart, right? Very, very close crises that are very close to one another. And then 2000, so that's 3 years away. And then the great financial crisis begins in 2007. So that's 7 years away. It ends in 2010. And then in Europe, we had this huge central banking crisis in 2015. So that's 5 years away. And then we had the repo blow up in 2019. And then we had COVID in 2020. So that's 4 years and then 1 year. And now what's going on today is 3 years following COVID. So it's 3 years since the last crisis. So these boom and bust cycles are becoming more severe, right? The crashes are becoming more severe. And the subsequent economic stimulus, the subsequent fiscal and monetary policy easing that comes after, in response, they need to be much larger and more severe in order to compensate.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of put it into perspective, not going all the way back to that far in history, but in 2008, it was a banking collapse, the great financial crisis, and it took $700 billion. That was the TARP bailout plan. $700 billion to bail out the global financial banking system. And today it's $10 trillion. Potentially this next one might be $20 trillion compared to just $700 billion in 2008. Now, one thing that I like to look at is like this Fed funds effective rate. So the basically, most people already know this, that setting the price fixing doesn't work. Socialist and communist nations have always tried this. It always leads to shortages and then more prices going higher. Price fixing doesn't work. But yet what the Fed is doing is they're setting the price of money, which is actually setting the price of everything. And they do that by setting the price of money through the interest rate. And if you look at a chart of the Fed funds rate, really since 1980, the rates have been going down, 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 down. And really starting about 1990, they raised them, and then we had the crash in the early 90s. They had to bring it back down again. They did bring it back up a little bit in 95 and kind of normalize it, had to lower them in 2000. And since then, they kept them low. They started raising them again in like 2005, and then another crash, had to bring them down. They tried to normalize it 2019, another crash, had to bring it back down. And it looks like, basically, if you look at this chart, every time they try to bring the price of money back up, it causes a crisis. Is that kind of what you would say is kind of that mechanism?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Each and every time, it seems that the way in which these cycles begin is in response to a crisis. And so they begin easing policy, but then they ease too long. Either inflation is roaring or the economy is just simply too tight. The labor market is too tight. You know, businesses are doing too well, which is a pretty scary notion that the Fed would then try to counteract that by making the price of money more expensive. But then they make it expensive for too long. They cause things to break. In 2019, it was the repo market. In 2008, it was these banks. And as of right now in 2023, it seems to be the banks once again. And time again, that seems to be the policy response for sure.
Yeah. Now, you know, when they went on this hiking path of, let's just call it reckless abandon. I mean, they haven't really raised rates this fast or this high, really maybe one time in history. But I mean, this is sort of unprecedented. Now, a lot of people, myself included, didn't think we could do this because we're sort of in this like Ponzi scheme. Well, because to explain it to everybody, we're in a debt-based monetary system. And so if we're not continuing to expand that monetary system, that debt base, then it contracts. So we're either expanding or contracting, and they don't want the contraction. And so a lot of people, like I said, myself included, thought, oh man, they can't really raise rates. They can't tighten because the whole system will crash. But yet here they did. And a lot of people were saying, well, they're gonna keep hiking until something breaks. A lot of people were like, well, what is this something? Typically, we would think about the liquidity in the system. But now it looks like the Fed has broken themselves. So they were making money and sending that to the Treasury. Now they're broke. And so now they're putting that as deferred liability. The government, the U.S. Treasury, is now broke. They had to borrow $1 trillion this first quarter, $932 billion. And now the banks are broke. I mean, is there anything else they can break?
That's a fantastic question. And to your point, it seems that there are several more things that can break. What we just saw was a credit event almost occurring with banks. But then what the Fed has really done with this new facility is essentially writing a blank check to those banks. You know, basically every single time something has occurred, the Fed has, rather than pausing hikes altogether, they still want to fight inflation. And so what they're doing is they're creating these facilities, and basically it's like plugging holes on, you know, a boat. Let's say you're a ship captain, and you know, on the hull of your ship, there are holes that keep popping up. And so you have one of your crewmen put his finger in it, and then a new hole pops up, and you put in it. It's, you know, like Popeye the Sailor Man, right?
Yeah. And as these new holes and elbows and
exactly. And then, you know, but eventually you run out of extremities and limbs to plug these holes with, and then the ship floods. And what we're seeing right now is the Fed, you know, it doesn't want to abort ship. It doesn't want to stop its hiking path. And so instead of stopping the aggressive monetary tightening, more aggressive than we've seen in over two decades, it's choosing to create these emergency facilities and plug these holes and really dispersing risk elsewhere. And so the likelihood of a credit event in the banking sector is now lower. But by the same token, that doesn't change the likelihood of a credit event for corporations that have to deal with this mess, particularly tech corporations. We've started seeing them lay off people, which is sort of the precursor to what might come down the line, which is actual defaults. And you know, you just mentioned a debt-based monetary system. There are two ways that a credit cycle corrects itself.
Let's come back to those corrections in a minute. We got to take a quick break, but we have so much more to discuss, and you don't want to get caught in this. You better understand what's going on. So we're going to talk more about that. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm sitting down with Joe Consorti. You can find him on Twitter at Joe Consorti. Check out the Bitcoin Layer as well. We're going to be back talking about that. We're going to talk about can they keep hiking? What happens from here? Is this a thing to be blaming on crypto? And so many more things we're going to talk about. Don't go away. I'm going to take it just a quick short break. We're going to be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show. Of course, we're talking about the decentralized revolution, but today we are talking about the meltdown in the banking system. Has the Fed broken things finally to the point of no return, or where do we go from here? I'm joined by Joe Consorti. Check him out on Twitter, at Joe Consorti. Check out the Bitcoin Layer as well, the newsletter. I subscribe. You should too. Anyway, Joe, I cut you off, but you were talking about, you know, how much more things could potentially break, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And so really with corporations, we've begun to see layoffs, particularly among those more interest rate sensitive firms. What's been happening with the Fed's aggressive hiking cycle is really you start to see things break sort of in a domino of interest rate sensitivity. The more interest rate sensitive firms exploded first, those being the crypto firms, and then these tech firms started laying off a whole host of people. And what you're going to see as this year trudges along, if the Fed is able to hold rates higher for longer, which by all accounts they'll be able to because they're creating these emergency facilities, you're going to start to see defaults on payments. Rather than firms being able to fully repay the people they borrowed money from and the financial institutions they borrowed money from, you're going to begin to see defaults. And that is obviously going to spiral, right? If person A defaults on a loan from person B, then person B now can't rely on those cash flows it was expecting from person A. And so he has to default on person C and so on and so forth. And that cascade of sorts of defaults could very likely move its way through corporate finance this year, if not relatively soon, then in the next few months. And that could be the next straw that breaks. And frankly, I don't know how the Fed is going to intervene there other than reversing course entirely. And so I think at this point, in terms of monetary tightening, it's really reaching a breaking point where it needs to decide what it should do and what it really can do without really harming these corporations.
The problem that we have here is, you know, I really got involved in the financial system in 2008 because I was involved in business. I did really good in business. I made a lot of money in business. And then I got hit super, super hard in 2008. I just completely blindsided. And I'm like, what the heck is this? I got to go figure that out. And so I kind of became a gold bug. It's like, oh, the fiat money system is the problem. We need sound money. That's the answer. And I started listening to Mike Maloney and Peter Schiff and Ron Paul and the Fed, all that stuff. There was a book that I had read in about 2006. It was by Harry Dent Jr. called The Bubble Boom Ahead. And he really kind of broke it down. I was like, oh, shoot, I see what's happening. I better start selling all my real estate. And I've been following Harry Dent and these guys for a long time. And their research is right. I've had Harry Dent on my show a couple of times. He spoke at my last conference. People are like, why would you have that guy on? He's wrong all the time. I believe his research is right. All his analysis is right. What they're wrong with is the timing. They continue to underestimate how many magic tricks the Fed has up their sleeve. Just when it seems like they're cornered, they seemingly can pull some other magic trick out. I mean, is that how you would see it? What do you think about that?
I see it the exact same way. And that's explicitly why in my analysis and in the analysis that we do over at the Bitcoin Layer, we try to keep it not sensational. We try to play it as rational as possible and as realistically. We mentioned that plugging holes analogy before the break. And time and time again, the Fed is backed into a corner, then it can pull a rabbit out of the hat. You know, it can create a portal in the corner and leave and give itself some more time. And that's what's happened time and time again, right? When in 2015, when Europe seemed on the brink of crisis, it was on the brink of crisis, the Fed just turned to these swap lines and created permanent swap lines with the European Central Bank in order to funnel liquidity to distressed European banks. It backed its way out of a corner there and it saved the ECB. In 2019, it created a permanent, well, it had this overnight reverse repo facility whereby banks could park their capital there and earn a persistent rate of return. And it saved the repo market when it made that facility permanent. And just what happened on Sunday, it did the exact same thing again, right? Through quantitative tightening, the Fed has removed so many reserves from banks to the point that these small banks were actually facing solvency issues. And the massive mark-to-market losses from Treasury securities meant that they were about to face a bank run. It seemed that the Fed would have to pause QT. And just when it seemed like they were backed into a corner, they pulled a rabbit out of a hat and essentially through this new facility they created, wrote a blank check. And so time and time again, it seems like the Fed can avert crisis. And I can imagine they're just going to continue creating more of these facilities as more emergencies pop up.
Yeah, I mean, in 2020, when that whole pandemic thing started, I mean, they came up with all types of new facilities, all types of 3- and 4-letter words for all these new facilities. I couldn't believe it. And these were things that they weren't really, I think, legally able to do, but yet they still found a way to get around that and still do it. And so these things, to Joe's point and Joe's analogy is right, all they're doing is plugging the dam. This does not fix the problem. It just keeps the dam from breaking today and it just, you know, it'll break later. But man, I mean, who knows how many more extremities to your analogy they can pull up. Let's talk about something else. So they're kicking the can down the road, as we say, right? They're just plugging the holes. It's not fixing the problem, so to speak. The Fed could decide not to bail out the system anytime they want. But so far they seem to want to. It does seem, we talked about this yesterday on another space we were on, in the fog of war, And so what we've seen is like this Operation Choke Point 2.0. And so there was Choke Point 1.0, now there's 2.0. And basically they're sort of restricting the ability for like crypto focused companies as well as banks from getting liquidity, getting money in and out, things like that. And in this kind of takedown sequence of events or banks, Signature Bank got taken down. One of the authors of the Dodd-Frank Act said that he didn't see any reason why it should be taken down. He thinks they just took it out for no reason in this fog of war, so to speak. And seeing as the system needs the Fed to save it, and so everyone's at their mercy, do you see this as something that could potentially escalate? Like they need to take away the safety nets. They need to take away the exits, so to speak, right? Do you think this could be something that they might increase?
Precisely. This seems like an opportunistic takeover. I think in the wake of FTX, they realized that they allowed this scam to basically, they allowed the Trojan horse into Rome, and it nearly completely destroyed the city, right? It nearly destroyed the faith in these institutions. And so now, rather than actually acting as they're supposed to, they're going after anybody who remotely resembles a crypto on an off-ramp with traditional banking, and they're going after them. And even in the case of Signature specifically, they were a solvent institution but from the time that they went into FDIC receivership on Sunday. And essentially, all of the mania that happened with Silicon Valley Bank over the weekend, they were able to, as you mentioned, in the fog of war, slip this in coercively. So this is not only deliberate, but there was no reason to take over Signature Bank because at the time of their takeover, they were a fully solvent institution.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a scary thing. We know recently, Caitlin Long, someone who I had on the show, it's an amazing interview for everyone listening. If you want to go check that out, just go to my main YouTube channel, Mark Moss. Got hundreds of thousands of views over there. And she tried to get a bank through in Wyoming called Custodia Bank, which was going to be a custodian, which was going to, potentially hold all your cash in reserves. So instead of loaning it out and putting you into these dangerous situations, they would hold it. And they got denied. And there was another bank, I think it was called Narrow Bank. They tried to do something similar where they would just hold your money and they would charge you a fee to hold your money for you. And they got denied. And so the reason why, according to what they say, they got denied is because the Federal Reserve can't allow that to happen because everybody would want to move their money there, which of course they would. And then the entire system would collapse. It's only as weak as its weakest link is what I kind of said on her post. And so they don't want to allow us any way to exit. They wouldn't allow a bank to open like that because everybody would leave. And the same could be said with cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the banking collapse. I want to come back and talk about can they keep hiking and what comes next? I'm talking to Joe Consorti from the Bitcoin Layer. Check him out on Twitter at Joe Consorti. I'm going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. You don't want to miss it. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the banking meltdown, the bloodbath. Has it just begun, or is the bloodbath going to be stopped for now? So Joe, talking about that, the Fed is on this rate hiking path with reckless abandon to stop inflation. Now, inflation, as they define it, is prices going up. I like the Austrian viewpoint of inflation is when the monetary supply increases, but they want to stop prices going up. Now, prices are the equilibrium of supply and demand. So what they want to do is just crush demand. Well, let's just make everybody broke. Last week I played some video clips of Senator Kennedy grilling Jerome Powell and saying as much, you want, and actually I played a clip of Elizabeth Warren as well, saying you want unemployment to go up. You want 2 million people to lose their job. What do you want to say to those 2 million people, right? So they literally want you to go broke. They literally want people to lose their job. They want your wages to come down to get that down. Now, the other side of the equation is they could try to get prices to come down by bringing more supply to market. They could do all types of things like tax credits if you create more goods and services, right? They could do all types of things, relax regulations to get more supply to the market. They could do things like that, but they don't. And so they're trying to do this. However, well, they're crushing demand. And when people don't have as much money, they don't pay as much taxes. You and I have talked about this. So two things are happening here, and this is what's interesting to me. As they raise interest rates, the payments on the debt servicing goes up. That's their expenses. But their income is going down because they're getting less tax receipts, the U.S. government. Can they keep hiking? If they keep hiking, the government keeps going more broke. The banks continue to go more broke. Is this the end? I saw, looks like as of yesterday, the betting markets were saying that there's like a 90% chance of a pivot before the end of the year. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so there are a couple things. The first one is that the Fed usually remits its profits to the United States Treasury, right? The Fed is a bank, just like any other, right? And it holds these securities and it takes in cash flows from these securities. But it has been winding down its balance sheet, of course. And so now it's no longer getting cash flows from those treasuries that it's allowing to mature off its balance sheet. And as a result, now it has gone negatively profitable. It is no longer profitable and it doesn't have any profits to remit to the U.S. Treasury. And as a result, it's been creating on its balance sheet an accounting gimmick, what's called a deferred asset. Rather than the Fed, because it's hemorrhaging money going under like any other bank, right? Like Silicon Valley Bank did, the Fed has the ability through this accounting gimmick and a magic wand to essentially just put it on its books as a deferred asset. Now, if it's deferred, when does it have to be repaid? Well, that's the cool thing. It never has to be repaid. If you read the fine print about what a deferred asset is, then the Fed can choose when it wants to actually repay that. So it's racking up tens of billions, what will eventually be hundreds of billions and potentially even trillions of dollars worth of debt that the Treasury isn't getting. So the Treasury isn't getting those profits from the Fed. It's bank, right? The United States Bank. And at the same time, it's facing a massive maturity wall next year on debt that was issued at an average coupon of just 1.5%.
30% of the debt has to be refinanced in the next 12 months.
Yeah. And so 30% of the debt, you take a look at the fact that there's this massive maturity wall, right? 30% of the debt that has to be refinanced at a rate that is three times what it was financed at previously. But the Fed is also not remitting profits to the Treasury. So the Treasury is not getting any money to refinance this debt. It has this big maturity wall coming up and has to refinance it because rates have risen to 5% all across the curve at basically three times the price. And so that's the crisis that the Treasury is facing now. And with the debt ceiling approaching, obviously it's going to be raised. The question has to become, how much longer can the Fed keep influencing these short-term rates higher when the Treasury is facing this big maturity wall? And the question, it's this unstoppable force that's meeting this immovable object. I don't necessarily have the answer for it, but certainly the answer seems to be more debt issuance, right? More people gobble up this debt so the Treasury can continue financing itself through this debt. And I tend to believe that the Fed is probably going to be a big buyer of that. It's going to resume quantitative easing and purchase that debt in big quantities in order for the Treasury to finance itself. And so it's a snake eating the tail, and that's going to continue going on cycle after cycle.
Yeah, the Treasury, not only is their interest payments going up, so 30% of that debt has to be refinanced from the ones up to the threes, fours, whatever the rate's going to be at that time, which is going to double, triple, quadruple the amount of interest payments they have to pay. But then their tax receipts are going down. So tax receipts are down 9%. So their receipts are dropping. So it's a real big problem that they're in. As far as the banks go, I mean, I was thinking like, well, shoot, they can't keep they can't keep raising rates. The banks are all going to go bust. But now with this new facility, Joseph Wang, the Fed guy, I've had him on my show as well. Great interview. Go back and check it out on my main YouTube channel and just search Mark Moss, Joseph Wang. But he's saying that now that basically this facility has been put in place, the Fed can continue with their hiking.
Yeah, essentially that's what it's done. So I'll give an analogy to the listeners. Perhaps you might remember, I don't know if we discussed it when I was last on the show, but last year there was a scare in the United Kingdom sovereign bond market. Essentially, it played out largely similar to what happened here in that the value of those United Kingdom bonds dropped so much that people that were holding them on their balance sheet and actually leveraging them were facing margin call. And what needed to happen was the Bank of England stepped in and said, we're going to buy as many of these bonds as is needed is to stabilize these funds and make sure that they don't default. So essentially, that allowed the Bank of England to intervene and stabilize its bond market and its financial institutions while continuing to tighten policy. It's raised its policy interest rate by several percentage points since then. And that's the same thing that you're probably going to see with the Fed here. The Fed, via working with the Treasury and the FDIC, has created this facility just to stabilize banks, but it hasn't indicated, and I don't think it will indicate, that it plans to stop keeping policy rates elevated. Whether it's going to pause relatively soon and hold it there or keep hiking in 25 basis point increments, basically, this new facility allows the Fed to stabilize the banking sector, basically saying, if you ever run into liquidity issues, don't worry, you can borrow from us and we won't tell anybody. So that way there's no stigma related to you as a bank. All the while, they can continue hiking. And it's a way of the Fed that the Fed can play this monetary magic, have their cake and eat it too. But at the end of the day, it's just introducing new risks and dispersing those risks through the financial system. So eventually, when we have to pay the piper, when the Grim Reaper is finally at our doorstep, the crisis that we have to contend with will be all the more worse.
So the Fed has basically backstopped the banks by giving them par on all their treasuries. So forget that you've mismanaged it. Forget that you've haven't paid attention. Forget that you haven't hedged anything. We're just going to make you whole. So that brings the banks whole. And now they've effectively backstopped all the depositors. So we had up to $250,000 FDIC insurance on our bank deposits. And the Fed has said, well, we're just going to bail out all the depositors as well. So basically, the Fed is backstopping both the banks or the treasury market, and they're backstopping the depositors as well. That's where we're at.
Precisely. That's exactly what they're doing. And frankly, if you look at the size of Silicon Valley Bank as an institution, the Fed created in order to justify bailing them out and obviously insuring all uninsured depositors, they created what was called a systemic risk exception. This was a phrase that was thrown around much more in 2008 when 200, 300, 400 banks failed and the FDIC had to take those over the next decade. But this bank, Silicon Valley Bank, was the 18th largest bank in the United States. It only had $212 billion worth of assets. All told, right, compared to the big four, JP Morgan, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and JP Morgan Chase, it was a pretty small bank. And so what does that tell us about the solvency concerns of the banking system at large? If this $212 billion bank was systemically threatening if it went under, so the Fed decided to bail it out, what does that tell us about the larger institutions, right? Are the larger institutions just as fragile, right?
And then they're saying, well, if Peter Thiel didn't put out that tweet about pulling money out, it wouldn't have collapsed. And it's like, if people wanted to get their money out of the bank causes the banking collapse, maybe the banks were already ready to collapse. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the banking collapse, of course. I'm joined by Joe Consorti from The Bitcoin Layer. Check that out and check him out on Twitter, at Joe Consorti. Man, I want to come and talk about what comes next. Is this the end of capitalism? We're going to talk about that and a lot more when we come back. Take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents.
Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say "free this week" into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the bloodbath in the banking sector, how the entire banking system was melting down, and then it got magically saved by some more magic tricks of the Fed. I'm joined right now. I'm talking to Joe Consorti from the Bitcoin Layer. Now, Joe, if we play this out, like where does this go, right? So lots of talk about CBDCs and central bank digital currencies, which is basically the central bank, which in this case, the Federal Reserve, would issue a currency directly to the retail customer, you and I, and we would just have accounts with the Fed. Now, there's a million reasons why that's big, bad, scary, authoritarian, lots of control, surveillance, et cetera. And I did a show with Sam Callen from Swan talking about CBDCs, and he said, you know, they're not going to ship. And I was also thinking, you know, it's probably going to be hard to get something like that through the United States because of this pesky thing called the Constitution, and the Fed doesn't have the right to issue money, only the Treasury does, and all these different things. But here we are, and if the Fed is backstopping all deposits, that sort of means that we sort of have accounts with the Fed, maybe. I mean, it's certainly a big step forward to going to that level, isn't it?
It is. It is a massive leap. And I tend to agree with Sam in the idea that in the United States, at least CBDCs won't ship. But this is a step closer to the Fed, to individuals essentially having an account with the Fed. And if all deposits can bypass the FDIC, if banks are paying insurance to the FDIC sort of as a formality, and the Fed is the actual one who has the ability to backstop all depositors in the United States, that just makes it one step closer to them controlling the price of money, the interest rate even more than they actually do, and the actual spending behavior of individuals, right? If they, you know, it brings that reality one step closer to our doorstep. And I think Lynn Alden posted this and several other people did. But over time, the FDIC insurance limit has gradually increased. Before 2008, it was, I believe, $50,000 or $100,000. And then in 2008, it was $250,000. Now with the actions on Sunday, essentially all deposits in the United States are insured to infinity. And so that introduces a tremendous degree of moral hazard into the banking system. And now that basically individuals have a direct line with the Fed, I tend to think that that's going to create even more misallocation of capital, kick the can down the road even further, and potentially, because now we essentially have direct lines with the Fed, might usher us closer, one step closer at least, to a CBDC.
Yeah, I mean, if we have an account directly with the Fed, I mean, that is sort of like a CBDC. I mean, that's it maybe doesn't have all the technical capabilities of that, but it certainly gets us one step closer. Now, I had also been thinking that, you know, one of the many reasons why maybe it won't ship, if we're going to play that role, is because we have the US dollar stable coins that have already proliferated around the world. And so really, what does the Fed want? They want to control money. They want the dollar to be the main currency. The stable coins have done that. That's done really well for them. I've been working on this theory, this idea for a video. I haven't been able to get all the research done, but how USDC Circle might be the actual coin of choice by the government. And you can look at the attack that happened from Terra Luna through Celsius. Tether was the number one and number two investors on Celsius, and they got taken down. FTX was, I believe, the largest redeemer on Tether, and then they got taken down. So it's like almost like this attack on Tether, which is the competitor to USDC. USDC is this kind of Goldman Sachs company, Circle, that now has a partnership with BlackRock. And now BlackRock has worked out a deal to hold the money and then create a a bank account with the Fed for that money. And so it's like getting closer, closer, closer. And then that could just be the CBDC. It's already there, right? Which could be this very thing. But now it looks like Circle might have gotten caught in this. And some people are even speculating that maybe this is even somewhat of an attack on Circle. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There's an angle there. And I think that some of that may be exactly correct. There were interests within the United States government that were embroiled in Silicon Valley Bank that made it more attractive to bail them out than to not bail them out. The Fed may have chosen to bail out Silicon Valley Bank, not because it was an integral financial institution from the standpoint of being so large that if it exploded, the fallout of vaporizing all of its creditors would have been catastrophic. It could have been that they bailed them out because they had interest in doing so. One of them is obviously the Department of Defense, right? How many startups who work with Raytheon, work with Lockheed Martin, some of those other small defense contractors, how many of those were startups and had their capital locked up in Silicon Valley Bank? And by the same token, Circle, right? If the United States government has an interest in Circle and making that the CBDC of choice and the Fed making that the CBDC of choice, that could also be a reason as to why they decided to bail them out. Circle had $3.3 billion worth of their cash reserves at Silicon Valley Bank, which is roughly 10% of the total reserves for USDC, which means, for those of you math wizards out there, that USDC would now have a technical value of 90 cents rather than $1. Not the most stable coin in the universe. And in theory, if enough depositors redeemed their USDC for actual dollars, Circle wouldn't have been able to meet all of those withdrawal requests. And so from the standpoint of the United States and the Fed having an interest in Silicon Valley Bank from a defense standpoint, but also from a potential future CBDC and Circle as that prospect, really wouldn't surprise me if that's the reason that they intervened rather than financial instability. Because like I mentioned earlier, I don't think Silicon Valley Bank going under would have created financial instability. There could have been other motives here.
Let's talk about that for a second. This might be a little out of your wheelhouse. I don't know. We never really talked politics or just kind of political theory, but what do you think would have happened if they wouldn't have bailed out SVB? And what do you think the effects of bailing out SVB are for capitalism? So I saw Ken Griffin from Citadel said, this is the end of capitalism. Capitalism is breaking down before our very eyes, is what he said. So what do you think would be the effects if they didn't? And what do you think this does to capitalism?
Right. So I think the effects, if they didn't, you would have seen creditors who weren't, you know, obviously you would have seen uninsured depositors, so individuals over 250,000 have their funds totally vaporized. The FDIC,
but they wouldn't, right? Because they only had a $1.8 billion hole, right?
Exactly.
Or was that all they had at the time? If they would have had to liquidate all the bonds to pay all the depositors, I mean, how much would have been lost? 10%, 20%?
Precisely. So investors still would have been able to get 75 cents on the dollar, maybe, you know, at
not worst, investors, the depositors.
The depositors, yes. At the worst, 50 cents on the dollar. And so there was still a tremendous degree of recoverable assets there. And the FDIC, even if it was taken into receivership and this didn't happen, and the FDIC was able to liquidate some of those assets, it in all likelihood would have been able to deliver the same thing on uninsured depositors getting 70 or 80 cents in the dollar. And so I don't think there would have been tremendous fallout here. I think this is just a knee-jerk reaction on behalf of the Fed, on behalf of the government. Maybe there was a call from the president in there. Basically a knee-jerk response following 2008 to say, oh, we got to go right now, bail them out. And obviously it's not a bailout. It's more of a facility that, you know, come and take cash as you need it. But by the same token, it does chip away a little bit at the idea of capitalism, because what this did, it was basically nationalize the banks, right? It said that rather than the FDIC, which is this private insurance corporation, it's obviously at a federal level, but this private insurance corporation that the banks pay premiums to in order to operate and offer that $250,000 deposit insurance on all depositors with that amount of money. Now, the Fed and Treasury in confluence stepped in and said, hey, we'll take over, guys. No worries. If banks need funding, we set up this facility where they can borrow against all their distressed assets. We can forgive all their mistakes. And that idea of forgiving all the mistakes of these poorly allocated banks, not only is it introducing a tremendous amount of moral hazard into the system, but it's essentially nationalizing the banks, right? Which completely detracts from the idea of capitalism and the idea that those who efficiently allocate their capital get rewarded. And now those who poorly allocate their capital can just erase the mistake. And so I think this is a massive mistake. And I think it's definitely detracts from the idea of capitalism in America.
Yeah, it's what we call moral hazard, right? And so since they know they can't fail, they're just willing to YOLO all the time. The losses to the depositors, I kind of agree with Joe, would have been immaterial. A 10, 20% haircut to the richest people in the world, it would have been like a little slap on the wrist is what it would have been. But it would have told people like, hey, here's a slap. If you do it again, it could be worse. And that's maybe what we needed to wake people up, but we didn't get it. Anyway, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We've been talking about the banking collapse. Of course, we're going to be talking about this quite a bit because this is not over by a long shot. I've been sitting down with Joe Consorti. Check him out at The Bitcoin Lair, at Joe Consorti on Twitter. And that's what we got. Thanks for listening.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.